You know, last night we watched The Girl on the Train, the 2016 movie based on like a best-selling thriller that has Rebecca Ferguson in it, because we're kind of on a Rebecca Ferguson kick right now.
Yeah.
The movie is terrible. Don't watch it.
Okay. What did the girl on the train say to the man coming onto the train at the station?
She said, "You're my ex-husband, and I think you actually were the one who killed that woman in the woods because you were secretly having an affair with her and got her pregnant."
Holy shit, spoilers. I was going to watch that. In spite of your protestations.
It's like trying to be Gone Girl, but also there's some girl with a dragon tattoo in there, but it's not either of them to any degree of being good. It is an aimless film, I think is how I would describe it.
Well, you just kind of sat sort of dejectedly in your seats. I could see you thinking about this bad movie. Just, oh, God.
It was 2 hours. We hit a point 45 minutes and we paused it and we're like, how are we 45 minutes in? Nothing has happened.
You could have stopped watching. You could have at any point just given up on it.
No, we needed to watch a bad movie last night. We were both having bad brain days. Sometimes a bad brain day, you fix it with a bad movie.
This week we're getting nostalgic with some old school early 2000s, 90s point and click adventure games and a little trip to the news publication, The Mithril. Why?
Buds, a storm of buds, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Welcome to Storm Buds. I am your host of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I'm joined by my co-host of light, Alexander Hambrock. Say hello.
Hello.
Okay. I feel like I'm being made fun of. This is a video game podcast where all the segments are Final Fantasy XIV jokes. That's just what it is at this point.
Yeah, it's like the Final Fantasy XIV content is mostly segment names.
Yeah, there's sometimes we dip back into that well.
Like last week. Last week was fun.
Last week was something.
do you think last week was not fun?
It was easy to edit. I'll give you that. It was great. It was great on that front. No, it was fun. It was cool hearing your opinions about the Dark Knight quests, and you all should go check it out because those are some beloved quests, and it's always cool to hear new people experience that stuff, including our first 45 episodes, which are a full fucking recap of Final Fantasy XIV's 2.0 to 6.0. Yeah, that's it. I was about to say 6.5, and I said, no, we didn't recap those. We had some takes about those, and we were like, no.
But you can go back and listen to all that if you haven't already. If you haven't, I'm
possible.
Glad we're getting new listeners.
You know, come on in. Please do enjoy the story or hang out, and because we're going to talk about something completely different. That's right. We started as a recap podcast, but now we're just going to talk about point-and-click adventure games today.
I will say, going forward, we have ideas for more structure. The last couple of months, we've been figuring some stuff out.
Well, this particular month, yeah. Last month we had, I mean, I don't know, Stormbugs was pretty good.
Stormbugs is pretty good.
Pretty good structure. But yes, today we're covering some point-and-click adventure games of your past, because I just thought I wanted to give you some space to, I take all the space to say what I like, but what are some of the things that you want to bring to the table?
Are we going straight into it?
Why the heck not? Oh, wait. What's that?
What's
in the distance? It's a giant glowing golden exclamation point in a quest in a little speech bubble.
You're making fun of yourself now.
I'm making fun of myself now.
You're adding more layers each time, and it's becoming increasingly...
I'm a self-hoisting petard onion. Huh?
What? Quest log.
Let's talk about the shit we've been up to this week. Y'all know it's Balatro. I unlocked all the decks now. I'm working on the gold stake difficulty. It's the hardest one. Shit, game's getting hard. I've also been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Those are my two. I'm 80 hours into this game. Still not done.
Are you close to the end?
This game is massive. I think so.
How many more mini games have you been playing?
They keep adding more.
Have you gotten to the golden saucer?
Yes, I had. That was forever ago.
Okay, genuine question.
This game's huge.
Is it too long?
No, I don't know about that.
Because like when I played Elden Ring a couple years ago, I hit a point in that game where I was like, okay, I don't know how much more Elden Ring I want to keep playing, but it kept going for like 25 hours after that.
It could be too long. I am fine with it. I don't know. I never feel that. I don't really feel that way about too many video games. I think I did feel that way about Tears of the Kingdom, but also I was kind of just like, I want to kill this guy. I want to kill this Ganondorf guy. I was like motivated to finish it as opposed to. Anyway, debatable. It's debatable. It's definitely not too short. Remake felt padded. This game, I will say, doesn't feel like padded like Remake does, where you're like going on these main quests. You have to do this like very obvious thing to fill in the story beats to make the Midgar chapter longer. It feels more like these are all important, relevant things to do. There's just a lot of them. You know, there's a, you know, that difference of like, why the fuck does this random thing have a random MacGuffin that wasn't there before, versus like, wow, they put a lot of the original game into this. So that's interesting. I think an interesting distinction to make. Still a pretty wildly successful game. Very enjoying it. Can't wait to finish it and move on. But also, I don't know. I'm excited to see. I'm not sure if I want to like perfect everything in it or if I want to move on.
I will say, like, when Remake first came out, Remake's the first one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. When that came out, I remember people being like, oh man, it only covers the first disc. We're going to be like 15 years until we get to the end. And actually, it sounds for this like pretty, like 2028, probably. We're going to be playing the last one of these.
I hope so.
That's not too bad.
That'd be cool. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think we all know that it's going to be called Reunion. That's the Remake Rebirth Reunion kind of. They're theming it. It would be a shock if it wasn't, because the whole Sephiroth, whatever. If you know, you know. But yeah, we could talk more about that at a later date when I'm done and more time has passed, and maybe we'll do a Beans cast. Maybe we'll do an episode on it at some point in the future when you've played it. But for now, what have you been playing this week?
Nothing. All I have for a quest this week is on the drive over. I tried the new Wendy's Ghost Pepper Spiced Chicken Sandwich.
Go on.
It was disappointing.
Oh.
It was a Wendy's fried chicken sandwich, but like it didn't have a good level. Like it was too mild for something advertised as ghost pepper, and also like the flavor wasn't particularly good. And I just kind of like ate it in the car, and then I was like, that was not what I wanted it to be.
Ghost pepper doesn't really taste that good.
You know, you're right, and you should say it.
I did. It's not. It doesn't taste that good. It's just the novelty of the heat is all ghost pepper is.
Yeah, no. Give me like a Carolina Reaper sandwich, then we can start talking.
Holy shit! but you have to be level. You have to be level 70 before you can unlock that sandwich.
Am I anywhere near level 70? I have no idea what level I am.
Hmm. Yeah, well, go talk to the Wendy's merchant in Ulda, and if that quest isn't red, then yeah, you can unlock.
What level do we think we are in our lives? I feel like I'm
are we
like,
age? Are we like? Is our age our level?
I don't.
Are we? Did we just unlock Astrologian?
I don't know. I feel like I'm either like level 6 or I'm like level 43. Like I don't quite know what kind of like how that scales.
I don't either, because there's no rubric or table in front of me. But if our level is our age, but it's not, it doesn't always feel that way, does it? That's what this episode's about.
Speaking of age.
Yeah.
So I was surprised that you had never heard of these games even. But actually, I think this is an age difference thing. I think you probably just missed these by a few years.
Maybe. I don't know about that. I mean, my best friend is a big point-and-click adventure gamer. He probably has heard of these things.
So for some context here, so I don't think we really mentioned it. I wanted to take this week and talk about the games of Humongous Entertainment, which was a video game studio that operated from the early 90s through to the early 2000s, putting out kid-focused point-and-click adventure games. And in particular, a lot of people played these games. They were very popular, as far as I know. This is coming up because recently the entire point-and-click catalog was up on Humble Bundle for $15, so you could get all 20-ish, 30-ish games maybe for like when you include the arcade titles for a relatively low price.
Oh, wow.
So I bought them all and started kind of just poking around them again and playing them. And I don't know how many people realize that this actually is the studio that Ron Gilbert founded when he left LucasArts. Mm. And Ron Gilbert is...
Monkey Island.
Yes, Monkey Island. But, like, the Scum Engine in general, he did Maniac Mansion, he did Day of the Tentacle. Like, a lot of the classic stuff that wasn't out of Sierra was out of, under his stewardship at LucasArts. And in the early 90s, he left to do a children's game studio. And the thing, I think... I still don't know that I've really played other games that kind of work the way that these ones do. The thing about even the later LucasArts title is that they were in a lot of ways still kind of sprite-based. By which I mean, in addition to the whole, like, verb system and everything, you know, you also, like, you had a character, and that character existed as sort of like a sprite in the world that maybe move around and you could do interactive stuff on that. And I think largely because they were able to take advantage of the new CD-ROM technology in the early 90s, which, you know, that's where the Myst games came out of as well. A lot of people were experimenting with what you could do when you could include a lot more data into a game. All the Humongous Entertainment titles are basically entirely hand animated from, like, at every single point. There's no sort of canned animation about anything. You have all these characters that you're moving between scenes, as you do in a point-and-click adventure game, but every single scene transition is completely custom and completely... And like I said, it's like a smooth animation. And not only that, but all of the scenes are full of interactive objects. Like, every single one of these little tableaus that you can move your characters into will have a half dozen or a dozen little interactive objects around the frame that you can click on, and a little novelty animation will play. And it's all completely seamless. When I think about a lot of other games that have tried to do similar stuff, I mean... A lot of times, either if you had stuff that featured a lot of animations in it, then you'd be able to see kind of like the edge of the animation object, right? You'd get like a little bit of like a box around it, maybe, where something about like the texture work didn't line up quite properly, or like a video file was playing and the quality of the video file didn't quite match the quality of the embedded scene. None of that's the case here. All of this stuff, it's... Have you seen the Tom Hanks movie Big?
Oh my god, it's been 20 years at least.
Okay, but you know the scene in the boardroom where he talks about, like, what if, like, why does the robot turn into a building? What if you had a comic book and the kid could choose what happened on each page of the comic book and get a different story?
I don't remember anything about that movie apart from the fortune teller.
Okay, well, these are, I think, the closest I've seen someone come to actually managing that. Hmm. Like, these are interactive children's books in a way that even, like, I played a lot of, like, other edutainment titles both in the 90s and later on that would try to do similar things but didn't have kind of the scope and scale and ambitions of these. And as time went on, I think a lot of modern adventure game development really continued in the vein of the Sierra and the LucasArts stuff. Like, the closest comparison I can think of to these is the Amanita Studios, Amanita Design. They're the folks who did Machinarium. They do the Samorost games. They got a very similar sort of, like, playful sensibility to them. But even there, a lot of what they're doing is, like, they have kind of, like, modular objects that they drop into the world, and you're sort of, like, moving characters around to interact with them. I'm doing a bad job at describing this, but the way that every single frame of this game looks like a children's book illustration, except that then you click on it and it seamlessly animates in ways that, like, that you just you can't see sort of like the technology behind it. I don't know that I've seen anyone do it since then.
And describe the sort of fidelity of these games of this era.
Low res, but higher than you're thinking. Certainly higher than like a Day of the Tentacle, even.
Okay.
Actually, we're going to look at some screenshots later. So, okay. Like, you know, about as high output as you can put on, you know, a 90 CRT monitor. Sure. And also, because CRT, some stuff we're going to see looks pretty pixelated, but it did not look that way back then. Like, you know, it looked a lot smoother.
That's going to be our old man yells at cloud.
Pretty much.
In video games, isn't it? Like, because we grew up on these CRT things. It's like, it didn't look that bad in our day. I don't know, but kind of did at the same time.
The biggest fidelity compromise here is that the animation, I think, is all like 12 frames per second. Like, it's not smooth, like Disney style exactly.
Okay.
But even still, there's a lot of times when, like, when you give something to a character or you activate something in the world, and the game will snap into a couple of, like, you know, different pre-animated sequences from a different camera angle or zooming in on the characters and stuff. And then it snaps back out to the world. And even there, it's really hard to see the fidelity difference.
Mm.
Like, it... it looks like a cartoon that you are playing on your computer. And so, I don't want to oversell, like, the scale of these games. If you know what you're doing, you can beat them in about 40 minutes. They're for children.
Yeah.
9-year-olds are meant to play these and meant to be like, oh, I go here and I get this item and then I take it there and I give it to that guy. But they're fully voice acted.
That's
like,
right up my alley. That's exactly the level I need to challenge and stimulate my growing brain as a young child. That's what I need. I should pick these up and stream them.
We should absolutely stream these. It would be so funny.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess if you have them, but I would have to get the, I don't know if the bundle's still up. I don't know, how many am I really going to play through, though?
We'll check it out.
How many are in that bundle? Like 20, you said?
Yeah, I'll give you some recommendations. Okay. There are a couple that I think would be better to play than others.
Okay.
And so they made a bunch of these. They had a bunch of different franchises. They had Putt-Putt is like the the youngest children's little purple car.
Okay, I was thinking golf. I was excited there.
No, he's a little purple car.
I love games that make fun of golf.
Putt-Putt is for like 6-year-olds. Then there's Freddy Fish, which is what if Nancy Drew was a fish? then there's
what if Nancy Drew is a Pisces?
Then there's Pajama Sam, which is a little boy who constantly confronts things that he's worried about or scared of when he puts on his little red cape and becomes a superhero and gains all his courage.
Oh, wow.
And has to do things like, well, we'll get there. I'm not going to give you any context for Pajama Sam.
He has to deal with the auditors that are coming for his fine. That's what I think is terrifying. That's what I need a red cape for.
And then there were the Spy Fox games, which mm-hmm. were aimed at like 11, 12-year-olds. And those were like, the art style of those is actually really different. It's almost like Ed and Eddie style. It's just really striking. Yeah, they're very odd looking games. I never played much of the Spy Fox ones. But these were just fully voice acted, very funny, very charming. And I was thinking about these even before the bundle came up, because I don't really know what kids games really sort of are trying to do this these days. Either it's stuff like Fortnite and Roblox, which have all their own issues, or it's stuff like Magic Leap, which is like really sort of like cheapy, boring kind of like entertainment type stuff, or it's like Candy Crush, which I think is just bad for kids.
I don't know. If you're a kid, write to us at stormbudspodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what games you're playing, child.
I don't know who's making just sort of like fun narrative focused games for kids. I guess like that Bluey game that came out a few months ago. People said that was okay.
Again, we're not the target. No, I am. I'm the target audience, but I am also unaware of what games are being made for children because I play cool grown up games
like Tekken,
and Hollow Knight.
And Balatro.
Did Balatro's gotten in trouble for gambling, hasn't it? Like in some countries?
Has it?
Yeah. They've had to like redo the rating and stuff.
Oh my God.
I think so. So maybe that one's definitely for a big boys. It's a big boy mature game, even though it's really not. But
anyway, I love these games. I think that they're extremely charming. And so we had a segment that I came up with here.
Okay.
This segment is called Alex Sends Screenshots to Jerome and He Describes Them on Air.
That's not a Final Fantasy. No, try it. We got to... Our podcast has one thing. It's one thing. And all the segments are Final Fantasy 14 jokes.
What's the name of the new class with the paintbrush?
It's the Pictomancer.
Yeah, here. This is the Pictomancy segment, okay?
All right. Thank you. Pictomancer
okay.
Corner.
So we have got 3 screenshots from Freddy Fish games and 3 screenshots from Pajama Sam games. And the way this is going to work is I'm going to show each of them to you one at a time. I want you to describe in as much detail as possible what you see in what I'm showing you. And if at all possible, guess at the context of what is going on.
Okay, cool. How many guesses do I get?
As many as is funny.
Okay.
First screenshot, this is from a Freddy Fish game.
Oh, okay, this is the fidelity. Yeah, that's pretty good. So you are Freddy on the left there, and there's your pal. There's a small green fish. Just describe what's going on. Their name is Fiona, and they are a non-binary icon, and they are accompanying you on this journey where you're approaching this underwater saloon there's a Western style saloon with like a big wooden wagon wheel and barrels piled up in front of a saloon door. And there are these three octopi and a spittoon. And so what's happening, these two of these octopi, there's a blue octopus and an orange octopus. They both got these Final Fantasy Black Mage hats on. And they are casting the spell. They're casting Thundara. And then there's this third lady octopus who's got, she's ostensibly very old. She's got her gray octopus hair in a bun, little glasses and knitting needles. And she is crocheting or making a blanket of some kind. And reclining. So she is probably the boss, like the big boss. And then those are her two black mage henchmen. So I'm assuming this is a big boss battle. And you, Freddy and Fiona are trying to get them to let you into the saloon, even though you're underage.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. That is incorrect in many different dimensions.
Okay. Do I get a hint?
This is a part of a puzzle solution.
Okay. So this is the puzzle here is that you can only get in, but you can ask them three questions, but one of them always tells the truth, the other one lies, and the other one only knows the way to Trader Joe's.
What color is the stuff in the spittoon?
The stuff in the spittoon is orange, which is alarming. Because that means that the spittoon is full of orangina.
I'm going to call those your guesses.
Okay.
This is part of a puzzle solution. What you can do here is you can get the octopuses to squirt different colored ink into the spittoon and use it as dye to make something the correct color to get through a different puzzle elsewhere in the game.
Okay.
But yes, these three octopuses just hang out on the porch of the saloon all game and act old at you.
Okay, cool. I don't know. It's pretty close. All right, number two.
Number two, again, Freddy Fish.
Okay, Freddy Fish. Freddy and Fiona are in a movie theater at this point, but they're joined by two more fish. The fish in front is just a random fish. We don't know who they are. They're green. They're kind of got a big mohawk, kind of blocking the screen a little. The fish on the right is a blue fish, kind of like Dory, but their name is not Dory. Their name is Heifer, like from Rocko's Modern Life. Same one. Different voice actor, though. This one's voiced by Jake Gyllenhaal. And they are watching a movie. The movie is a black and white silent film. They're in the theater, black and white silent film. This woman with a sickening Edna Mode bob, woman fish, sickening Edna Mode bob, kind of animated like old Animaniacs, kind of, you know, how do I describe this? Sort of like she got Pac-Man eyes and lips that are an oval with a line through them. And she's holding half a fish skull, that is just a skull. And there are spotlights all around her. So I'm guessing she is performing the Alas Poor Yorick monologue from Shakespeare's Macbeth. Oh my God, I forgot which play that was from for a moment. That would have been very embarrassing.
Wait, you got it wrong.
Is it wrong? Is it
Macbeth.
It's not Macbeth. No, it is. Alas Poor Yorick. No, it's fucking Hamlet.
Yes. I thought you were joking for a second.
I was joking, and then I wasn't, and then I was like, it's got to be Macbeth. No, it's Hamlet, isn't it? Oh, shit. Oh, well, I can't edit that out. Anyway, there's a second monitor that is where the woman is performing the same soliloquy, but much happier. So I'm guessing that's the outtakes.
That's like the movie poster that you click through to get all the different little movie clips.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's like, this is the sort of the DVD extras on the left. This is kind of a forward-thinking theater where they give you the movie and then they also give you the DVD extras. I think that's what's happening here.
Yeah, sure. Nailed it. Okay.
Okay, great. Fucking. Okay, so this is another one. He just instead of saying anything into the microphone for this audio format, he just turned the iPad around.
Screenshot, Freddy Fish.
Frederick and Fiona have the deed to their newly purchased condominium in the River North area. They're moving out of the ocean into the river. A little more exclusive. There's a little less room to wiggle around in. And there's two people in this fancy looking office here. There's a guy in a blue pinstripe suit and a blonde fins, and his eyebrow is raised. And his hands are on his hips. And there's another guy who looks... There's another fish that is, like, bright green and really tired looking. He's got a tweed blazer on with a bow tie and a vest. He looks probably maybe like Alex in about 25 years if he were to...
Jesus Christ, okay.
I'm just saying. I could see it. But Alex got LASIK, so he's not using glasses anymore. You know, he's investing in himself.
What do you think they're talking about?
I think they're talking about the impact. I think that they're talking about perhaps collectively buying out all the single payer homes, so that they can price up the market and force out any marginalized people from their community, so that they can sell those homes to contractors at a massive profit.
Not quite. This is from the climax of Freddy Fish 5, which is a game that is, and I'm not joking, about a corrupt real estate developer who illegally seizes land in order to build an amusement park.
Okay, well, I was very close.
You got pretty dang close.
I got the vibe about it. I just made it a human thing as opposed to a child's thing. I just made it like a very adult thing. Very Disco Elysium thing.
Okay, we're moving on to Pajama Sam.
Man, what a good game.
First screenshot from Pajama Sam.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is like that thing I mentioned before, where the three people can only tell you lies, truths, and Trader Joe's. This is a small child in pajama. He's got his red cloak on. He is a blue Bart Simpson, basically.
Yeah, more or less.
And he's in front of a door. There's two doors. The doors have faces.
Describe those faces.
The face on the left has a big Greek nose and a trustworthy smile and really handsome gait to him. And he's got a microphone, just like me. So I really like this guy. I think he's incredible and talented and handsome and funny. The other guy is, the other door is got crow's feet. His nose is a little bit less Greek. It's still large, but it's kind of downward and hooked a little more like neo-colonialist, you know, not like the ancient settlers, but like the ones that cause the modern day problems. And he's less smiley. He's less happy to be there. So I think he's having a rough time. So I think now this is this child is very lost on the streets of Madrid, and has wandered into the wrong sort of neighborhood, and is trying to get directions on the way home. But these two doors, well, he's allowed to ask these doors questions, and only one of them knows the way home, and the other one only knows the way to Trader Joe's.
Oh, that's more or less entirely incorrect.
Okay.
No, Pajama Sam, in this context, has snuck into the land of darkness, where darkness himself lives, because he wants to trap him in his lunchbox so he won't... He wants to trap him in his lunchbox so he won't be afraid of the dark anymore.
Oh.
But in darkness's house, he runs into these two fellows. These are the doors of knowledge, and they lead further into the house. But in order to get past them, you must first win at their quiz show.
Ty Lopez?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, cool. Knowledge.
We got a bonus screenshot here also. We don't need to analyze this one, but just I played through this game earlier. This is one of the questions on that quiz. Do you want to read it for the audience?
What did the young King Francois II say when his advisors asked what to do about poverty in France? A. How should I know? B. Huh? C. I don't have time for hard questions like this. Or D. That's too hard. I'm just a kid. God, oh man, those are all good. I'm gonna go with A. How should I know?
I think that's too hard. I'm just a kid was the correct answer when I played earlier today.
Damn it. That's funny.
Pajama Sam, screenshot number two.
Okay. That was a fun bonus round. Okay. Pajama Sam is back. Blueberry Simpson's back, but he's on top of a foundry instead. There's a big kind of looking steam engine sort of thing. Maybe a foundry. I don't know. There's orange everywhere. There's a big orange sort of jug at the bottom, and then there's a... Oh! That says... This thing says UV filter, but then there's also a coffee filter in it. So, it's a UV coffee filter. He's afraid of coffee, and he wants to also protect his young, youthful skin. Why did you... You turned that, and then you just opened the downloads tab on top of the image. I was looking at it.
I was trying to
refresh it, because the iPad keeps going dim. Anyway, so there's a... there's a big coffee pot at the bottom with a UV filter, but they're filtering out... So this is like an allegory for sunscreen, and he's like, I want to maintain my youthful complexion as I get older, and I don't want to look like those geriatric millennials that are on their phones all the time. I want to be youthful and keep my collagen. So this is sort of a Magic School Bus-esque solo trip on where he ingested some ayahuasca and is now learning all about the wonders of sunscreen and how it can preserve his eternal youth.
So close. This is from Pajama Sam 2, in which he is afraid of thunder and lightning because there are scary noises and bright flashes.
Okay.
So he goes up to Weather Corp, where they manage all the weather, but he accidentally lands on a big red button that breaks all the machines and has to go around and fix all the weather machines. This is the sunscreen filterer. It takes in sunlight, and it puts it through a UV filter, and then it gets canned up so it can be deposited back down on Earth.
Okay, cool.
Last Pajama Sam screenshot.
Okay. Pajama Sam is back, and he is the executive of his own company now. He is at a board meeting with a bunch of investors, and the investors are not happy with the lack of automated testing on their software as a service sort of financial and logistics solution that they provide to lots of local businesses in the state of New York. And so they... are kind of coming at him from all different directions here with all these sorts of demands. Like, we need automated testing, we need to hire, but we also need to hire lots of manual engineers to make sure the product we have works and looks good, because like there's some inconsistent branding.
Is there anything about the investors here you think is kind of noteworthy?
Well, one of them is a loaf of bread. So I assume that is sort of like he is really... like the chief financial officer, so he doesn't really have a whole lot, but he's
because he makes the dough.
One of them has a helmet and a hat on. They're all wearing hats, and I'm just assuming that's because it's national holiday hat day. It's a statewide holiday. It's just New York. They have hat day on April 3rd. I'm so excited we might take a trip to New York, do Storm Buzz from New York, so we can go to hat day. Anyway, one of them is also an apple, but she also has a plunger on her head. So I think she just had an operation and doesn't really want to talk about it. So we probably shouldn't really make any more remarks about her. But yeah, it's just a sort of like a your typical kind of investors sort of like come in and they don't really know what they want. They just sort of like they're just saying words that they hear about, but they don't necessarily want to like research the kind of things that they're asking for. They just kind of have money and they expect you to know all the problems. So this Pajama Sam is really afraid of that kind of like position and leadership. So this is an episode about leadership and how it can like be presented to you as sort of an opportunity, but really can be like a poison because you just end up being sort of a punching bag.
You know, that last bit is not entirely thematically incorrect.
Okay.
Even though what's actually happening here is that Pajama Sam is basically addressing the delegates of the food pyramid.
Oh, okay.
So we have the bread, we have the broccoli, we have the lollipop.
Yeah.
The cheese is the one with the helmet.
Is the lollipop in the food pyramid?
You know, candy and sweets.
Okay.
This is from Pajama Sam 3, when she goes inside his own body in order to address all of the food that he eats in order to have a balanced diet. The premise of this one gets away from me a little bit.
Okay. Okay. But yeah, I see the pyramid theme now. So it was in Nevada, not New York.
Oh, that's right. The last guy on there was a bean. That's right. You got the bread, you got the cheese, you got the lollipop, you got the broccoli, the bean, and the apple.
Okay.
You know, your food groups.
Mm-hmm.
We got one more bonus image also.
Okay, another bonus image.
Again, just want you to read this one.
I love her already. This is a woman on a issue 4 of Airline Food Fancier. She's in grayscale, but she is holding an entire wedge of cheese that has a recycling logo emblazoned on the side. I guess that's mold. I don't know how they made the mold do that, but that's pretty impressive. And it just says cheese substitutes made from plastics. And she's going ham on that cheese. All of these images will be in the Discord, by the way.
Yeah, we'll put them in there.
You could join the Discord by joining the link, going to the link in the description of the episode. But yeah, we'll put that in there.
So I think that gives you a bit of a sense of like what the aesthetic dimension of these games is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I did my best. I think I did pretty good on that exam.
You did pretty good.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You mostly got there, like most of the time. Sometimes,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so. Cool. Well, was there anything else you wanted to bring up about Huge Entertainment and any projects from Huge Entertainment you're looking forward to in the future?
No, just that I'm annoyed that, like, you know, they advertised the Humble Bundle as the complete Humongous Entertainment collection,
yeah,
but it's missing all the Backyard Sports titles because they lost the license to Backyard Sports in like the mid-2000s. But the Backyard Baseball and Backyard Soccer games and all the rest of them, those games were cool.
Could be a Backyard Sports 3, like Baldur's Gate 3, and it's made by Larian.
Actually, there was some actual athlete who was discussing bringing the Backyard Sports brand back.
Hey, Larian Studios, can you please make Backyard Sports? I think that's one of the best ideas I've had in my entire life.
Backyard basketball.
Incredible. I think that that was a rousing and exciting presentation on a genre of games that I had absolutely no exposure to. Not entirely genre. I mean, I like Monkey Island, but yeah, Huge Entertainment, not a publisher I grew up with at all. If that's somebody you grew up with, let us know in the aforementioned mediums, Discord or email.
Humongous Entertainment. It's Humongous.
Oh, is it? Okay. Oops. Well, I can't fix it, but thank you for correcting me.
Anyway, on to our next segment, I think.
Yes, so we are going to take a moment to hear a word from our sponsors, and then we will be right back with another fun segment.
We're gonna read some ads.
Hey, Jerome, you know, are you getting a bit hungry? Do you need a snack?
Yeah, I could do with a bit of a snack, but I've got some terrible digestive issues, so I have to be really careful about what I eat.
Yeah, I know. You are, like, lactose, at least indigent, if not intolerant.
Lactose indignant, yeah. Yeah, I've also got a case of mild to moderate IBS. What can I eat?
Well, you know, I've got something here. You like Go-Gurt, right?
I sure don't. That's way too much sugar.
What if I told you you could have Protozo-Gurt?
What's that?
Protozo-Gurt is Go-Gurt, which is yogurt, but it still comes in a tube, but it's made of protozoans, which are like little tubes.
Wow. So you mean those one-celled animals found worldwide in most habitats?
Some believe they were the first life to emerge on Earth, way back hundreds of millions of years ago.
Wow, I can't wait to eat a sweet treat made from microscopic unicellular eukaryotes that have a relatively complex internal structure and carry out complex metabolic activities.
And they're hyperprobiotic. They'll send your gut biome into overdrive.
That's exactly what I need, because sometimes you know, that mild to moderate case of IBS, it's IBS-A, so sometimes it comes out and sometimes it don't.
You can find Protozo-Gurt at your local 7-Eleven, where it can be found in the cheese section.
It's the equivalent of slamming your foot on the power button on your digestive system.
That sure is what the ad copy says.
That is exactly what the ad copy says.
Protozo-Gurt.
You can also buy it online at protozo-gurt.com. Use checkout code Stormbogurt. What? At checkout.
Stormbogurt. Yeah. It's
Stormbogurt.
Yep. Stormbogurt at checkout, and you get an extra tube in your case of 15 tubes.
15 tubes.
That's 16 tubes of Protozo-Gurt for the price of 15.
Protozo-Gurt. I can't wait to try one right now. Here I go.
Your expression looks delighted.
Oh, it's good. Protozoogurt for all your dietary needs. Mm.
Back to our show.
And we're back. Thank you so much to our sponsor. Okay, so we are going to be debuting a new segment. This is a segment about gaming news and the seriousness of it all. This is our new sort of news coverage segment. We really want to talk about broader news, broader gaming in general. And of course, news is a natural place to go. So we are going to be handing out our issues of the Mithril Y. What? The Mithril Y.
That's a question on everyone's mind. Why does anything happen?
Why does anything happen?
What is time? How does it proceed?
These are the things you ask yourself whenever you read any gaming news, because this shit's bizarre.
This year especially. It's been
a
weird
bizarre industry and a bizarre year. And we have some of the most baffling, but, you know, serious. We don't really want to make fun of these very serious stories, but also just the events that led up to them are just so baffling, you know? You know, but people's lives are affected by gaming news, right? We've heard all sorts of things, but we want to bring some articles to the table here and discuss them, you know, as intelligently as possible. So laughing is absolutely not allowed.
Not whatsoever. We're going to totally somber.
There's no punishment this time. I don't want to have to hear myself eat crab chips anymore.
Yeah, how was that audio experience?
I knew that was a time bomb when I planned it for myself when I did it. And it won't be happening again, but I wanted to do it at that moment because I wanted to get through some of those crab chips. We're just trying to be better about, you know, giggling too much. We want to take things seriously. So why don't you start us off with your first selection of the gaming news that I have absolutely no idea what it is.
Yeah, well, so here's the big story everyone's been talking about for the last week, of mm-hmm. course. I mean, it's broader pop culture related, but definitely affects gaming. That is, of course, Warner Bros. Announced their plan to sunset the Batman IP.
Mm.
On Tuesday, Warner Bros. Discovery announced its plan to write off the entirety of the popular DC Comics character Batman.
This is huge, yeah.
Citing financial headwinds going into Q3 24. The company stated that, beginning on May 30th, they will begin pulling all Batman films from streaming and store shelves, removing video games from online storefronts and revoking active licenses, and working with local comic shops to recall and shred all extant Batman comic books.
Okay.
When reached for comment, a spokesperson for Warner Bros. Provided the following statement. We know that Batman has been a popular character for millions of fans around the world, and we're confident those fans will continue to enjoy other Warner Bros. Discovery products, such as Restaurant Impossible, now in its 23rd season, and Game of the Year award-winning Hogwarts Legacy.
Okay, question about Suicide Squad. Still good?
No, Suicide Squad is being removed as part of this.
Okay.
Warner Brothers wants to pretend that game does not exist.
Okay, I can hardly blame them for that. You know, I used to, when I worked at a consulting firm, there was an engineer who would watch clips of Suicide Squad at his desk nonstop.
The 2016 movie?
Yes, yes.
The bad one?
Yes.
Why?
He had taste, he had a taste, I meant to say, and he would do that. He would alternate between clips of Suicide Squad and just gore? I don't know what he was watching.
I'm glad you don't have that job anymore.
I am too, but that was kind of funny though, in a way. But that's usually what I think of when I think of Suicide Squad. But tell us more about this Batman sunsetting. This is such sad news.
I was going to ask, like, do we think this is a good move for Warner Bros? I mean,
well, no.
No, you don't think just writing this, pulling an extremely lucrative opportunity to make money off the table for a tax write-off is possibly not a good route for a entertainment company to pursue?
I don't think that's particularly good. No, I don't know if I'm a Marvel or a DC person at either. So, you know, the fact that this is definitely happening, I want to say it has no bearing on me, but I'm not sure that's true. Like, these are such big things.
I think Batman touches everything, honestly. Like, you know,
there's got to be, you know, so if you own copies of, like, the Arkham games, and also, oh, you know what? This does affect Mortal Kombat as well.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Because Joker was in there.
Like, it's not actually clear if they're just going to remove those characters from the Mortal Kombat games or if they're actually going to get the Mortal Kombat games themselves pulled.
And Injustice, so the NetherRealm Studios is in trouble.
Yeah, it's gonna, okay. I think they're going to go scorched earth. I mean, based on how they proceeded previously.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, with wit.
With things like that time that they got rid of all of the Looney Tunes.
They got rid of every Looney Tune. That's right.
All of them, yes.
Okay.
Except the Animaniacs. Those guys got out.
Those guys got out.
They
and
made
so
it
did,
out of the water
so
tower in time.
They could only grab Babs.
Yep. That's mm-hmm. I heard they signed with A24 for a new reboot project.
Well, that's disappointing to hear, but, you know, I'm sure executives always have the best interests of the working class in mind.
Yeah, David Zaslav, I think he's got his head on straight.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, in a completely different story, we are going to kind of go back to our namesake here for a bit because I've got news about Final Fantasy XIV.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Final Fantasy XIV, and this is, I mean, maybe you've heard of this already. Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail Deluxe to come with they say the perfect pre-order bonus. In an interview with the Harbor Herald, executive director and producer Naoki Yoshida of Final Fantasy XIV's upcoming new expansion Dawn Trail has announced an additional premium package that includes one real live lioness in heat per purchase.
I'm sorry, what?
Cloned in a lab from a lioness that was ethically poached from the southern fringes of the Sahara, this lioness in heat will provide Final Fantasy players with what they've always wanted, a way to have sexual intercourse with a real live large feline. In the interview, Yoshida said, we pulled a random sampling of our player base globally, and they unanimously demanded this be an option regardless of their nationality, said Yoshida. So if you thought this was a Japanese thing, you were racist. Everyone wants to fuck the cats.
Do I need to get like an import license to purchase this game? Like, how are we going to deal with the transport of the animal?
Well, I'm sure that will all be handled by Steam. The Herald found an example of the survey, and all that was on it was a yes or no question reading, do you not want to live out your FF parentheses feline fornication close parentheses fantasy? When asked if he was on purpose interpreting both responses as positive responses, Yoshida balked and said, I don't know, that's none of your business, Baka, then put his little tiny hands over his eyes in embarrassment. He claimed the clones of the lioness perpetually are in heat by means of breakthrough and, quote, perfectly legal, quote, genome sequencing technology that Square Enix was secretly investing in using their recent NFT acquisitions as a front. What really sets it apart from other lioness tie-in pre-order purchases is the Square Enix logo that's been sequenced into the fur on its left hindquarters, which is proof of its authenticity, Yoshida boasted. The package will also come with a fun lioness fact as well as instructions on proper care. The premium price product is priced at $29,999, $999.95 plus tax and shipping and handling.
You know, I have to consider, mm-hmm. like, we know Square Enix has been, they've had a series of hits recently, but always their financial situation is a bit turbulent.
Yeah.
This is kind of a big swing for them. Is there a possibility this could backfire? I mean, if they've invested probably billions of dollars in this cloning operation, if they undersell a number of copies, they could find themselves mostly billions of dollars in the hole.
Furries are really rich.
That's true.
Furries have a lot of money.
But, okay, I would be really fair here, though.
Yeah.
Do furries want to fuck the lioness?
That's what the survey said.
Okay. You know, we can't argue with the survey.
Literally can't argue with it. Okay, well, you guys, hopefully if you've got your pre-order bonus, you can let us know how the experience is. Apparently, you must sexually relieve this lioness 20 to 40 times a day for 30 days at least. But, well, no, that's for a normal lioness. This one's that's in perpetuity.
Or what?
It's a lioness. What do you think's going to happen?
Is this going to be like the alligators in the sewer again, only it's going to be lionesses in like the children's playgrounds?
I don't know. I'm not going to buy one. What's your next article?
So this is also out of the realm of acquisitions and spinoffs.
Mm.
The Embracer Group has announced their new partnership with OpenAI and a new Saints Row title.
Okay.
Following the departure of Saber Interactive and several other studios from the clutches of the Embracer Group, the conglomerate announced earlier this week they'd be entering into partnership with OpenAI, a partnership valued at $6.2 billion, to develop new games in popular franchises, starting with Saints Row.
Okay.
In a statement released to Stormbuds, a company representative said, yeah, fuck it. ChatGPT will write the script or something. We'll make some graphics in DALL-E. It's going to be great. It probably won't sell a lot, but it will be dirt cheap to make. Look for a trailer at next summer's Microsoft Showcase or something.
Okay, so the Stormbuds did the interview on this one.
Yes, I reached out. I reached out and got that press quote.
Wow,
I mean,
cool.
I think it's exciting, obviously. We all know that AI is the future of creativity. And I think Embracer Group, really sort of paragons of forward thinking and creative development strategy, are figuring out how to, you know, embrace, if I may say so, the technologies of the future.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool that, like, our kind of child publication company, the Mithril Y, is actually reporting on the things that the investigative branch of the Stormbuds is doing.
I mean, no one else is getting paid for games journalism anymore. You might as well do it for free.
Yeah, you might as well. Yeah. But that's cool and good work. Good work, Stormbuds.
I mean, it's probably going to be better than the last Saints Row game, if we're being honest.
I did not play it, unfortunately. I did grow up in a city called Stillwater, so I really enjoyed that kind of connection with it. But when I heard it was expensive and medium, I was like, I don't really want to do that. But I really enjoyed Saints Row the Third.
Other news that came out, it's also genuine news. I learned that part of the exodus from the Embracer Group included Zen Studios, makers of Zen Pinball, to which I said, wait, Zen Studios is still around? They're still making pinball games? It's 2024. But, you know,
God, that sounds fun.
Good for them.
That sounds kind of fun. Should get one of those for long meetings. Okay. Well, that's exciting news, and all, you know, as far as I understand, all that news is genuine. And I've got here my last article, our last article of the Mithril Y segment. This one here is, I'll just read the headline here. Mamma mia! Tourism Board of Italy begs gamblers to cease Bellagio pilgrimages. The Tourism Board of Italy has put out a travel advisory for Americans looking to make the pilgrimage to Venice this summer to visit the so-called, quote, Mecca of Bellagio, end quote, at the Casino de Venezia. A representative of the board, Cognazzo Barbariccia, said, "There's a too many a stupid as turiste," emphatically in an interview with The Raven. "We cannot even play our own games of poker. Why are you writing my words like that?" Barbariccia cited examples of cultural appropriation that the Americans were committing in Venice, showing up to the casino in traditional papal raiment, but with clown paint, claiming to be Papa Jokes, which he claims to be extremely disrespectful. "Papa Jokes isn't even a real joker," he whined. When asked whether or not he played Bellagio himself, Barbariccia did admit that he plays it constantly. Barbariccia isn't the only one that's upset. The Raven also went out of their way to interview locals in the canals, whose gondolas are getting torn up by all the trash laying around everywhere. People are just breaking glass and throwing it everywhere in the water, and there's chips all around, saying things like, "Ha ha ha, take that, Bellagio. I've got a times 2048 multiplier. They're scratching my gondola up like crazy, and the chips are weighing it down. I can't even ferry my passengers around," claimed gondola operator Giordano Lumanati, who was remarkably fluent in American English. Other locals complained about being harassed by American visitors, saying they've been using violent language at them, with slurs like misprint, scary face, and gross Michelle. The article at The Raven also mentions how they reached out to the Church of Bellagio for comment, but their representatives were unavailable, likely too busy chasing that gold stake achievement to defend their members' actions overseas. That's the end of the article.
Boy, Bellagio fever is kind of taking the world by storm,
It really has, yeah.
Do we think this is a permanent thing? Is this going to be the Bellagio pilgrimage going forward?
I don't know, man. It's really hard to get in touch with members of the church.
That's true. They're famously reclusive.
They're famously busy and addictive. You might have to subscribe to them on Twitch.
I mean, we just heard how much the Italians hate it. But despite all of that, are you planning your real-life Bellagio pilgrimage?
I already went. Yeah, that was our family already did that, so we're good. I had to swim back. Okay, that concludes our report. If you've got any news stories you want us to cover on the Mithril Y, you can, of course, reach out to us on all our social medias and the link pop in the description below. And if you liked this episode and you want more, you can always visit our backlog. There's so much back there if you're new here. We got all sorts of bits, comedy shits.
Most of them are funny.
Most of them aren't funny, but we... You hate it when I'm self-deprecating. You really hate it. And I do it, and it makes me want to do it even more. But no, this has been a really fun episode to record. Next week's episode is going to be our newfound adventure on BeamNG.drive. And we are going to have, I think, probably today, because we're planning on streaming BeamNG.drive. So we're gonna have our next StreamNG.drive on the Sunday that this comes out, which will be the 24th,
the Saturday before this comes out.
Oh, okay. Well,
so if you're hearing this, you would have seen it possibly, but we'll post elsewhere, and maybe you'll have seen those in advance of when we recorded this.
Yeah, I'm going to be too lazy to retake this, so that's just going to be egg on my face. But
it's
okay.
Real podcasters do this all the time.
Okay, cool. Well, then of course, so this, and then the 31st will be our BeamNG.drive final thoughts, review, experience, what have you on that. That's our monthly game, and then I mean really gonna do it. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to continue engaging with us, leaving comments on let me check that again. If you've enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave us ratings on Spotify and Apple. Google Podcasts is apparently going away. Another Google product software solution, or that is inferior to its competitors in every way. Shocking.
Honestly, we should know better by now.
Yeah, well, so don't do that one, I guess. If you are listening via Google, be sure to save us and follow us on a different podcast platform, RSS, anything. You know, just to keep up to date. And I've mentioned the Discord like 3 times this episode. Please, it's a good time. Join us. But without much else to say, I've covered the next episode. I've covered our socials.
I think we're good.
I've done the begging, the pitiful, shitty begging that you got to do as a content creator. That's it. That's all I could think of. So until next episode, Born of Buds, Storm of Buds. We've been to the Storm Buds. Baby child.
Good night.
Bye. Welcome to Storm Buds. This is the video game podcast that has two dudes in it, just like completely different from every other video game podcast.
We can't be self-deprecating. We have to pump ourselves up, okay?
Okay, fine. I'll try again.